Ladies and gentlemen, happy Thursday morning, week 13 college football. This is the time where you say all college football weeks are great. All right. So normally what we like to do on Thursday is we talk about the upcoming slate of games coming up Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I'm Scott Russell. I've got college football experts John Bryce, Zach Barnett, Doug Samuels. Gentlemen, it's great to see you. Normally the way I like to do these things is talk through Friday maybe, jump to Saturday, and start early in the morning, and then work our way through the day. I am going to talk Friday and then Saturday. So Friday, I got two games. Quick thoughts: Florida State, NC State, Hawaii, UNLV. Give me short thoughts on those two, gentlemen. Anybody want to jump in?
Florida State and NC State are both 5-5, so the winner advances to the postseason, which is better than not advancing to the postseason. And the loser will have to beat their in-state rival. They'll go into that game knowing if they either they win and go to a bowl game, or they lose to their in-state rival and their season ends right there. So, is it the biggest game that's ever happened in the history of these programs? Absolutely not. But there's incentive for both teams to care about this game.
Yeah, I would take it a little bit further than that and call it the embattled coaches bowl between Florida State and NC State. There's a lot of nervous people on both staffs there, and I've heard that not only from people in Raleigh and Tallahassee, but also up and down the coast in the ACC. Both those coaching staffs have shared with their colleagues on the field recently in pregame or postgame handshakes, how much nervousness there is around the respective tenures of Dave Doran at NC State and Mike Norvell at Florida State. So, last weekend was a must win for Mike Norvell. This weekend remains a must win for Mike Norvell. And the following weekend against an interim group of Gators, it's a must win for Mike Norvell.
And then the other game that didn't get mentioned. I mean, Timmy Chang's done an unbelievable job at Hawaii here at 7-3. And then the Fighting Dan Mullins of the Rebels, 8-2. And I know Mullen walked into a really good situation that Barry Odom had left behind. But for them to be 8-2, I know they started really hot. They cooled off a little bit. But that's going to be a sneaky good game to stay up for and maybe try to fit in not us here on this call, but a little Friday afternoon nap to – stay up for that one.
give Timmy Chang some credit. It took a while to build the brotherhood, but he wasn't in a great season.
Was not in a good spot when he took it over.
Well, and I mean the resources there are almost non-existent, and then you realize they've got work being done on the stadium, so they're playing in just a tiny, tiny little facility, and so yeah, I mean. It's been a slow build, but even with all the obstacles he inherited with a rebuild, then there's all these other external obstacles, the changing landscape of college football and everything else. It's one of the better, more undertold rebuild stories in college football of the 2000s.
Doug, for a minute there, I thought you were going to work me towards crumble cookies. I was pretty excited. All right, moving on to Saturday. Normally, I'd go all through a litany of games. It was week 13, boys. All right, let's start with USC at Oregon. Zach, give me a feel for this game.
I like Oregon in this one. I'm going to need to believe that USC can go to Autzen Stadium and be tougher than Oregon. Both these teams have beaten Iowa in their last two games in less than ideal conditions, both of them. So USC's earned their way to potentially be a spoiler. But I think Oregon, I think they've heard the talk that they're ranked, 6-7, wherever they are. I can't believe I just did a 6-7. The talk is they haven't really earned that spot because they don't have a quality win and they lost by 10 at home to Indiana. So we know the type of motivator that Dan Lanning is. So I think he'll have his guys go out there believing that all 330 million Americans hate their guts and that they have to go prove it to the entire country by beating USC by 20 points. And I mean, it'll be a competitive game. I don't expect a walkover or anything like that, but I'll be very surprised if USC actually goes up and to Autzen Stadium in a must-win game and wins this game. put Lincoln Riley in Big Ten Coach of the Year candidacy?
For me, it's which USC team shows up, and I'm with you, ZB. I'm leaning the home nest Ducks in this one. I did a quick weather check though, and does look like an unusually pleasant day Saturday in Eugene, sunny and in the 50s. So not the weather elements that we've seen Oregon play in recent weeks, either home or away, or Southern Cal for that matter, who got ran all over, allowed 306 rushing yards last month in a game at Notre Dame, but then proved to be relatively physically tough in wins against Northwestern and Iowa that are true blue-collar teams and just very rugged football teams. So can Danton Lynn, the excellent USC defensive coordinator, not only get his group playing physically and sound in its run defense, but can he dial something up to mess with Dante Moore? To me, it's which quarterback gets affected most is the team that will lose the game. So if Danton Lynn can dial up something on Dante Moore, or if Dan Lanning and company dial up something that really messes with Jaden Maiava.
Zach is a proud father of a couple of teenagers. He went 6-7. That was aggressive. JB, I'm going to come to you with this one. Pitt is at Georgia Tech. Both teams have one ACC loss. Big game. How do you see this one playing out?
Huge game. Pitt didn't – Pat Narduzzi made very bizarre comments last week in advance of the Notre Dame game. And said he didn't care if they lost 110-3 or 103-10. But then he obviously cared about margin of victory because he called timeout with 1 second left in the game to score a cosmetic touchdown and make it 37-15 instead of 37-9. Pitt's got to play much more physically than I saw it play last week. It had some guys out. Maybe if that was an ACC game or an ACC championship, my understanding is a number of those guys would have played. Their best defensive lineman was out last week. One of their best safeties, who's a projected NFL player, also was out last week. And then Desmond Reed, the star running back, re-injured his ankle in that contest. So I haven't seen the latest ACC player availability report. But Georgia Tech's trying to bounce back and still control its destiny down the stretch with this game and then Georgia looming. If the Jackets win both of those, they will be a playoff team regardless of any ACC championship scenario. Pitt needs help. It has to beat Georgia Tech and Miami and then win an ACC championship game to get into the playoffs.
I'm worried about Georgia Tech's defense. I mean, we mentioned Sunday they needed 60 minutes to put Boston College away. It was a road game, but now you come home, you get Pitt, and then 6 days after this one, you got to go play Georgia.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's never easy, no matter the circumstances, especially on short rest. So I think if you're Georgia Tech, if you're a Georgia Tech fan, you want to put this game away early. You want to get Haynes King out early if you possibly can. I mean, not mid-third quarter, something like that. Obviously you want to win the game first, but if I'm a Georgia Tech fan, I'm watching like, let's put these guys away. Let's make this comfortable so we can get in the ice baths as soon as we possibly can to get as ready as we can be for Friday.
You see any chance that actually happens?
No. I think it'll be a four quarter game and Pitt should be well prepared for this one.
They've been focusing on it.
Now, I would contend, though, for all the hoopla about Cade Bell's offense, and it does some fun stuff. It can be fun to watch. It's still a little too much finesse. So if Georgia Tech sets a really physical tone early, I'm really concerned if I'm Pittsburgh. I had this stat while I was watching last week's game. Pitt, on its first 25 offensive plays, had 36 total yards of offense. 25 plays. 36 yards. Later in the game, they had 144 yards of offense on 44 plays, and 41 yards had come on two plays. So they had about 42 plays to get 100 yards to start the game after being 25 for 36 yards, and that was near halftime.
Vegas has to know something that we don't, because I looked at the total over-under on the Oregon USC game, and it was like 59.5. This one is at 62.5. So Vegas knows something that we don't. I think both of you hit the nail on the head with, defense is going to play a big role here. Pat Narduzzi has been known for defense earlier in his career, but Buster Faulkner and Georgia Tech dial up 18 different variations of counter that are going to have, you know, I think Pitt and Narduzzi's staff pulling his hair out. So I lean Georgia Tech on this one, and I think they're the best team in the ACC right now.
Doug, if you had to put a number on it, just ballparking, how many different ways do you think Buster Faulkner and Brent Key have to run counter with this team and this personnel they have?
I'm not. Can infinity be a number? I mean, they've done a great job at finding what their bread and butter is over the past 2 or 3 years, and doubling down with boots and reads and RPOs and everything they can do off counter. They're the best counter team, GH counter team or GY counter team in the country. And then you've got, you know, Lincoln Riley and USC. That's a really good GT counter team.
Good stuff. All right, gentlemen, Big 12. This game had so much sizzle, and then Cincinnati lost twice. BYU's at Cincinnati. Big game for the Cougars. Zach, what do we see here?
BYU, I think there's an argument that some people outside the Big 12 are saying, well, BYU, they beat Utah by 3. What have they done outside of that one? Why are they ranked number 11? And then everyone within the Big 12 is saying this team should be in the top 10. They've lost one game to on the road to a really good team, but they've handled their business outside of that. So I think you should see a motivated BYU team. If they have any shot at an at-large bid, they've got to go win this game. And I like the Cougars to take care of business.
Agreed. Jimmy?
Yeah, I think BYU's physicality is probably the difference in this contest, especially the way that Cincinnati has been beaten up the last 2 weeks. It's one thing to get physically manhandled on the road at Utah, but Arizona took the fight to Cincinnati last week, beginning to end, and really controlled that game almost the entirety. I know it ended up a 6-point final, but Arizona led that thing basically wire to wire. And probably the biggest win of Brennan's two-year Arizona tenure, whereas Scott Satterfield had them 7-1 a couple of weeks ago and in conversation for National Coach of the Year. And he's still done a really good job, and they've invested heavily into that roster, particularly quarterback Brendan Sorsby. So he has to go off to have a great game. I just think BYU is the physically tougher game. And as someone out there told me, like, yeah, Bear Bachmeyer is a little unpolished, but he also doesn't know what he doesn't know. The dude just goes and plays ball, and there's something to be said for that.
I think he's a stud. He's fun to watch. All right, I got a shock. Basically means we haven't talked about the SEC early enough. It's a rule thing, whatever. So I'm not going to talk about Samford at Texas A&M. Moving right along, Missouri's at Oklahoma. Oklahoma needs to win that game. Missouri's going to give them hell. Give me some feedback. Give me some thoughts, gentlemen.
Yeah, Oklahoma has done a really good job of playing to their identity, and that is a defense that's playing the best. And we can debate if they're really the best in college football, but they've been playing the best in college football over these past two games, their wins at Tennessee and Alabama, particularly in producing the big plays, because they don't win the game without that defensive touchdown at Tennessee and the defensive touchdown against Alabama, because their offense needs help. Here's a stat that I saw. Their net yardage, they've been minus net yardage in four of their last five games in the SEC. Against Ole Miss, minus 72. Against Tennessee, minus 105. Against Alabama, minus 194. And you could say the Alabama was a little bit deceiving because they had so many big plays on special teams and defense that gave them short fields, so they didn't have the opportunity to drive. But the offense is not great, and it's the third best unit on that team. So they're going to need to continue playing better against Missouri and LSU, because neither one of these games are walkover wins for Oklahoma.
Doug?
Yeah, I mean, I think Oklahoma's struggles a little bit offensively have gotten exposed. I think that was the talk of the first part of the season where in my conversation with people around college football, people were trying to figure out how can we duplicate the OC quarterback, bringing them both together. And I think that has infused the Sooners with some identity offensively and being able to move the ball. But really the story is Brent Venables taking over the defense and getting them back in the top 10 where everyone in Oklahoma expects them to be. I think Missouri has really taken some missteps the past couple weeks after a couple key injuries. We talk about Ahmad Hardy, I think, every week here, toting the rock. I didn't realize that Keyshawn Lacy, the running back at Ole Miss, was a Missouri product as well, was there for a little bit. So that running back room there was loaded. So credit Eli Drinkwitz and his staff for their ability to recruit. But I just think Oklahoma's playing really good football. That was shown last week. They're doing enough on offense to win, and defensively they're going to be in every game.
Yeah, for me, it's how much can how much can Missouri affect Oklahoma quarterback John Mateer? And Missouri did a really good job with that against Alabama earlier this year. I know that the Tigers lost that game at home 27-24, and if they lose this game at Oklahoma, they'll be losers of four of their last six after starting 5-0 and being ranked in the top 12 or so. But in that game against Alabama, the Missouri defense had seven TFLs and sacked Ty Simpson four times. It has to do something similar. It has to do something similar to have a chance against Oklahoma. And then it has to be able to sustain the run, as you guys have noted. If Ahmad Hardy is on the field for more plays than John Mateer, that's the recipe for Missouri to get a win in this game.
Brink has done a fantastic job in Missouri, caught a lot of eyes, and I think Drink's in a lot of conversations like, hey, could he be our guy for
big job? Not that Missouri's not a big job, but he's in the conversation.
Yeah.
And places like Red Stick and Happy Valley and all those.
I think Drink wants to score a little upset here, and they're going to be motivated. Good.
So I want to talk about this because we skipped past this game earlier, and I think it's a good point to bring this up now. Of the how is the sausage made in the college football playoff? The hide the ball trick that the committee does to promote certain teams at the expense of other teams. Missouri's ranked 22, and Missouri's a good football team. Missouri does not has done nothing to earn that ranking. They have not beaten a Power Four team that's above 500 all season long. Tennessee is 20th. Has not beaten a Power Four team above 500 all season long. But those are two ranked wins for Alabama and potentially another ranked win for Oklahoma on Saturday. Whereas Louisville and SMU are playing a big game in the ACC. They're both 7-3, and you can poke holes in any 7-3 team's resume. But both of those teams have wins over Miami, and that's not enough to somehow get them ranked, while as Missouri and Tennessee have done nothing. So if you rank LSU or Louisville and SMU, then Miami's got a slightly better resume. Alabama's a slightly worse. So I just think it's interesting the tricks that the committee plays to slot teams where they want to slot them.
I wouldn't call it tricks. I think diving down onto the data and studying like 12 different metrics. And I agree with you, like, for the record. I just don't think it's tricks. I just think, Missouri and Tennessee are a little bit hollow for sure. But I don't necessarily think tricks are being played. I think, if anything, there's probably a lot of weight given to the land where it just means more.
I also think a lot of weight is put into where you started off in the preseason. Like, if you're a preseason top 10 team, I mean, we're talking about a Missouri team that outside of this Mississippi State win this past weekend, and you take away a two overtime victory, Auburn, that very easily could have been a loss. They've lost four of their last five. To rank them in the top 25 is wild.
Well, and the other thing, a lot of people knock Miami because the Canes have played only one game thus far outside the state of Florida. Missouri didn't leave the state until like the seventh week of the season.
Oh yeah, that Auburn game.
Okay. Games on the opposite end of the spectrum. Derek Mason is in year two, just having a horrendously bad season. They got one game that they should win. We got Sam Houston coming to town. Sam Houston's been atrocious. Just the wrong player mix. He's got to get some things changed there. He's in year one. Derek Mason in year two. If Derek Mason loses to Sam Houston, you might have thought you were at rock bottom, but okay. That's all I got to say now.
And Sam Houston's been playing better football of late. They've actually won a Conference USA game, which Middleton can't say.
From the people down there, like they knew this season was going to be a little bit rough with all the departures from the program. But to quote someone that shared something with me a couple weeks ago, the cavalry is coming in December. So take that for what it's worth. And year two for Phil Longo heading into next
year. Yeah, and you're talking about Sam Houston.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, John.
I was just going to say, didn't Sam Houston also just win at like Wazoo or something, or Oregon State, one of those two?
I think it was Oregon State, sounds correct.
Yes.
Yeah, they won at Oregon State.
Yeah. So if you win at Oregon, if you win in Corvallis, I promise you can win in the borough.
And also they beat Delaware, so don't knock that one. Yeah. There. It's two in a row.
Yeah, Delaware's good. Ryan Cardy does a great job. Carrico Ryan on the secondary. Like that's a program trying to get bowl eligibility, whether they'd be allowed to go or not.
I'm not trying to shade the other, 70 games that we haven't talked about, but there's a bunch of them. Yeah. Are there any games you guys want to talk about on this podcast?
The Ohio State fans in my mentions are furious that we haven't mentioned that they're 31.5-point spread over Rutgers on Saturday. That apparently in their world is the biggest game of the weekend.
Well, welcome to being in the Midwest and Columbus fan, Zach.
And also, Zach, what do you expect, bro, when you're writing that their guy's not a Heisman candidate and he's a good player on the best team? Like, get out of here with that. Yeah.
He is a good player. There's no doubt he's a good player, and he's on the best team. His team's too good for him to be a Heisman candidate.
You can say that his team is too good for him to win it because the vote will be cannibalized. You can't say he's too good as a freshman doing what he's doing to be a Heisman candidate. The game I want to talk about is the game where game day should be this weekend, and it's Montana State at Montana, the Brawl of the Wild. I will go to that game sometime. It won't be this year, unfortunately. Maybe it will be in Bozeman, where they've just done unbelievable facilities upgrades. And those are two coaches, frankly, that should be getting more FBS looks than they are, although Brent Vegan, I think, is in the conversation at Colorado State. Mm-hmm. Bobby Hawk should get another FBS shot as well. That's the best game of the weekend. Like, it really is. Like, the Brawl of the Wild is the game I cannot wait to watch. I'll be following it incredibly closely, and I think that's where game day should have gone this weekend.
Yeah, ripping on game day selection is kind of a cottage industry in college football, but I know they gave a head fake. So what's the Division II rivalry in Arkansas that they thought about going to?
The Reddies. Yeah.
I should. Hendrix? Anyway, yeah. they talked yeah. about going to that, and they went to Notre Dame Pitt instead. Henderson which, State.
Yes.
Yeah, which whatever. And then now they're going back to Oregon for a second time instead of going to the Brawl of the Wild. And I believe they've been to the Brawl of the Wild before, but who's going to complain about turning on their television and seeing glorious Montana in their background instead of a second trip to Eugene?
That one, or pick a great D2 playoff matchup or something. I think would be that. I think that would draw a fair amount of eyeballs too.
I think that's a great point, Doug.
We touched on this one last week. Mercer is at Auburn. If there was ever a chance for Mercer to rise up, we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
It's absolutely possible this weekend, and that quarterback at Mercer, his name escapes me, but he's big time. Or, I think I've mentioned before, coaches I talk to say that guy will be in the SEC next year. So who knows? Mike Jacobs might be in a new environment next year too. That guy's a hell of a ball coach.
He is. All right, folks, that's Football Scoop Podcast. We love doing this. We'll be back Sunday with a little recap of the biggest games and the most exciting stuff we saw and what it all means going forward. With that said, see you Sunday. Enjoy the games. Zach still has a massive lead in the picks. Inexplicable.
Inexplicable.
It's been wrapped up since week one, boys.
Thank you.